So, Terry, I think you know I'm really excited about this interview. I've spoken about it enough.
Absolutely.
So I first met Nomsa when we had a clean-up day meeting and there were lots of people around the table. But Nomsa spoke up in the best possible way and got everyone back to where they should be. And on top of that, she had blue hair.
Can you imagine?
And she was dressed amazingly. And I thought, this is a woman I want to meet. And when I did, I really wasn't disappointed.
Well, neither was I, even after hearing everything you have to say. And Babette, I have to say, I wasn't disappointed either time. I think we have to admit that we interviewed Nomsa twice, dear listeners. True confession, Nomsa was the first interview we ever did when we, well, actually we, when Babette had this harebrained idea for a podcast.
Sorry.
And listeners, I can only tell you, putting out a podcast is a steep learning curve. By the time we were ready to air, Nomsa had done so much more that we had to go back and talk to her again.
And here it's my turn to confess that it's almost a year since we recorded the second interview. But the good news is that it's as valid as it ever was, particularly when she talks about her fantastically innovative project ideas. So please listen to the end of the interview and prepare to be amazed.
Oh, absolutely. Everything you've said about the power of Nomsa's interview is real. But I think one more thing I want to say, Babette, is that it wasn't only Nomsa's intellect and ideas that blew me away. I think a lot of the power of this interview came from the fact that, by definition, the people we speak to have achieved something extraordinary, are making a very, very big difference to the lives of the people around them, and are full of compassion, full of agency. Nomsa is all those things, and a Fulbright scholar and an economist to boot. But for all the reasons that the listeners will hear, she hasn't yet realized all of her vision. And the immense courage that it takes to wake up every day and start again, particularly when you are young and Black and gifted in a system that is sometimes corrupt, that doesn't always reward merit or hard work. It's very moving and inspiring to hear. So, here's Nomsa.
Thanks, Terry. Hi, Babette. Thank you so much for having me back. Right now in my life, I would say I am very connected to God, first and foremost. That's the thing I'm doing the most of lately. I'm praying a lot and really asking God, what's your will for my life? Things that I've been doing the most of is Soweto Night Out, the night tours, as well as singing. So I've been recording a new album. I'm still busy recording it. Got a new single out. I'm going to have another single coming out in a few weeks.
Tell us more about Soweto Night Out, please, before we get to the music.
So Soweto Night Out is the business that Funkatam Walking launched. Funkatam Walking aims to make it safe for a woman to walk at any time of day in any condition. And how Funkatam Walking does that is that it's a think tank for social enterprises, so ideas, businesses that enable women's safety. You know, I've always been an activist around women being able to walk safely in South Africa. And, you know, as women, we're living in a nervous condition. We're just scared all the time. And I really wanted to change that. But over the years, it became clear to me that women's safety won't happen unless it makes business sense. And so we spent 5 years researching what kind of businesses enable women's safety. And we've done a couple of bookings through Soweto Night Out. So Soweto Night Out is a B2B business. I do tour groups of 20 people or more. Which is why I have to be B2B.
Just explain B2B, please.
Business to business. And so I need 20 people or more in order for it to make business sense. I've curated night walking experiences, night tourism experiences. I've got about 6 in Soweto. And so a business can book for their company or team building, whatever it may be, to come on a night tour. On the night tour, we have a choir that sings along the route, which is absolutely incredible. We also have a tour guide. We work with the Community Policing Forum, who, you know, they patrol the community for free. And so when I have my night tours, I've monetized what they do for free. And so Soweto Night Out is that business where we get bookings and we do night tours in Soweto. We visit heritage sites. The museums open for me at night. just because of the benefit of the business to the community. And then we go out for dinner at the end of it all. So it's really incredible. I've had some bookings. A friend of mine came from the US. She's a rapper. Her name is Rhapsody. And we decided to do a night walk during Mandela Day. And she's a Grammy Award winning rapper. So she's got this huge following. And we got 156 people on a night tour on the 18th of July for Mandela Day, which was incredible. And I learned a lot having such a big group. So that was really beneficial in terms of making sure, like, the business is professionalizing by leaps and bounds. We are currently in a small business development program with Tebe Investments and the University of Johannesburg, which has been incredible just in terms of professionalizing the business. But, you know, as a passionate entrepreneur, I'm a one-woman show. So it's kind of getting training on how to manage my human resources. And I'm like, I am the human resource.
So as a passionate, young, Black, gifted entrepreneur, what are the biggest challenges?
The biggest challenges really is access to markets. You know, there's sectors in the economy that are very formalized. One would think that tourism is an informal sector. It's absolutely not. It's very formalized. And accessing markets is very difficult for entrepreneurs. So for example, 300,000 tourists visit Soweto every year. And, you know, you would think as a business such as myself, I'd be able to access at least 3% of that, or 1%, or 0.5%. But it's so gate-kept. There's international tour operators that run the show, and they have got policies internally that say that they don't do night tours. And so that, for me, actually was an opportunity, because once I realized that, that's when I applied for the Tebe Investment Program, because I want to buy my own bus. So that I can actually be my own entire
tour operator.
Exactly. But, you know, there's just those kinds of things where it's difficult to access the market, but also you've got to deal with people's perceptions. People are very scared of Soweto. They don't want to go to Soweto at night. There's a crime factor. And so as a business person, as an entrepreneur, I've just also been developing business ideas that enable Soweto Night Out to be a profitable business.
So since we've been speaking to you about your Soweto Nights Out, it's obviously so much more professional and organized, which is great to hear. But one key feature that I see in it is that you are doing that to enable people to reach a certain level of freedom or economic. Can you just talk to me about that?
Well, you know, Soweto Night Out is an important business in the sense that it's doing a number of things all at once. I call it alternative protest, because when you look at us walking at night, we look like a protest, because there's a huge group of us and my business branding is flags, and we're walking through the streets of Soweto and the choir is singing songs about community safety. And so it looks like a protest. And that's important for the community, that we look like people that are demanding safety. And we are also a performance. We perform the possibilities of safety. So the business itself is also performing for the local community the possibilities of safety, because Soweto gets 300,000 tourists a year. None of them stay past 6 p.m. They could. And so we are showing the community that there are 45 young people in a choir that are gainfully engaged, and we pay the choir to be there. And it's really young people, and they're not out there smoking, drinking. They're actually just singing and having a good night out. So we have a minimum of 10 community policing forum members. But as the group gets bigger, like for the Rhapsody night walk, we had 20 community policing forum members. They all got paid. And so they are all making an income from safety. In addition to that, we hired accredited tour guides from Soweto. They also get paid. Then we have dinner at a restaurant. That's all those people are eating at a restaurant in Soweto that, you know, during the week, which is when we do many of our tours, you know, Soweto restaurants are not really patronized during the week. There's a culture of weekend restauranting, but not everyday restauranting. So then we are giving that restaurant an income. A lot of the museums, especially the public sector ones, struggling with numbers, people coming. And now we've shown the museums that you can actually open at night. So I think the way our politicians imagine economic development is a fetish. They go and they look in Europe and they look in America and they imagine economic development in the ways that they see it. So if they see, oh, when there's economic development, there's a mall, then we see a mushrooming of malls all over the country. But it's not about that. Economic development means understanding that community and how to make that community sustainable. It's a tailor-made thing. You can't copy-paste economic development. And so through our work, we're just really hoping that we will inspire politicians and public sector workers to copy us, if they must copy.
Coming up, Nomsa talks about overcoming childhood traumas and mental health today in South Africa in the face of corruption, unemployment, and the despair of unsuccessful job applications.
So you're clearly very, very motivated in everything you do. But what is it that motivates you, that makes you want to do what you're doing?
You know, I know that I was born to serve. I know it in my being. I'm happiest when I'm solving. I'm happiest when I'm enabling positivity. My purpose is to serve. Like another person might say, my purpose is to sing. When I'm singing, this happens to me. Or my purpose is to build, and building makes me feel this way. For me, it's service. It's solving problems. It's making sure that people have access to great lives, lives worth living. And that's been me my entire life. You know, whenever I see a situation where that isn't happening and I can think of a way that I could make that happen, then I get passionate about doing that in that community.
Would that be rooted in your own early childhood?
I grew up in Soweto. My parents were what you would call in Soweto's level, Soweto black level middle class. Throughout my growing up, I was always in SRCs, always doing community service, always participating. Then I went to Forte. And when I was at Forte, I was very fortunate that at the time there was a school of thought that was driven by students that can think globally but act locally. So yes, get to know about everything that's happening in the world. Learn as much as you can get. Pick up as much knowledge as is possible. But always think about how you can use knowledge to solve local challenges, local problems. You must always be able to apply what you think. But in terms of the core, I believe that is definitely God.
Just to ask Nomsa about your childhood, you faced huge challenges in your childhood too, with the tragic loss of your mother very young.
Absolutely. I think we are shaped by the things that happened to us. My mom passed when I was very young. I grew up living a challenging upbringing. None of us are perfect. And unfortunately, many of us act out our imperfections to those around us. And I was a child when I experienced someone else's imperfections in a way that was very dismantling. Over the past year, I've been on this spiritual journey, connecting with God. Which I think is the big change that's happened between our last chat and this one. But it's the ability to forgive people. And I've been able to forgive, but not only forgive, but to love. And by no means am I saying people must accept abuse, because there's a very fine line between understanding a person and knowing a person and allowing a person to abuse you. I would say I've transcended that phase of my life where I would feel sorry or want to people please in a way that allows people to continue to abuse me. I've passed that. What I am in is a phase of my life where I'm able to see God in people. And that changes a lot. I'm able to move forward.
And the way you dealt with some of the challenges when you were younger was education, leading to a Fulbright.
Yeah, absolutely. My grandmother used to focus on education. She always talk about education because my grandmother was present while I was definitely at the receiving end of emotional, sometimes physical abuse, psychological abuse. And my grandmother was a witness to that. My grandmother is somebody that I loved so much, but she's somebody who didn't do anything about it, right? And especially now in South Africa, we were dealing with physical abuse happening and the neighbors know and everybody knows, but nobody's doing anything. You know, it's so deep. Abuse is so insidious. It takes away our humanity. And my grandmother was making me a survivor. So she's like, school, no one can take away school from you. And so I spent a lot of time studying. Studied, I did my matric, I went to varsity, finished my undergrad, did my postgrad, then did my master's in New York on a Fulbright, came back from New York, did a postgraduate certificate in public finance, then also did a course in music management, and now I'm doing the small business development, and I'm somebody who likes to learn more. This will speak to why I needed the last year of spiritual peace. So I studied a lot. And I was always taught that if you work hard and if you study, you will always have a job. Your life will always be sorted. Things will just work out because you're well educated. And I am one of the South Africans who got educated early. You know, when we're talking about when many people got access to NSFAS and all of that, in my day, it was still very limited. So you would think that people in my grouping are skills, which we are. But in 2021, my contract ended in a public sector position. And I'm still not employed. It's been 6 years. I don't give up. It's very difficult for me to give up. And so I'll keep pushing. Like when you met me, I was talking about funk and I'm walking. But that was still me pushing, trying, just doing whatever I could do to make life happen. I'm a single mother. I've got 2 children. Not having a job, a proper job, for 6 years is a very long time to be unemployed when you've got 2 mouths to feed and 4 little eyes that wake up and look at you like, what next? Hungry. Need to go to school. Need this. Clothes don't fit anymore. In August of last year, it all got to a head. It really did. Then I was like, wow. You know, because at that point, it was 5 years. I think I hit the 5-year mark. And from the 5-year mark, the despondency started kicking in. And by June, July, August, I had definitely given up. I was now planning my death because I've studied. And the government keeps putting out these gazettes and they're saying that there's a scarce skill and I am the scarce skill. They're looking for economists. They're looking for this. These are all the things that I've studied. I am the scarce skill. But I'm not getting a job. I've applied for hundreds of jobs and I'm not getting any jobs in the public sector. I'm not even getting shortlisted. I'm not even getting interviews. And so July, August, September, I'm now planning my death. And of course, I'm not going to go deep into it because it was terrible. It was selfish. It was horrible. I've never been so low in my life. I would say the week of, or at least within 10 days of when I was now really prepared to end it, I just did not see purpose or anything. My sister picked me up and she said to me, I'm taking you to rehab. And I went to rehab. And I found God. My life has never been the same again. My material condition hasn't changed. I still get sad about the public sector CEO who is in a position that is a job description my CV qualifies for. I still get sad about that. Because she doesn't have to worry about where's the electricity going to come from. She doesn't have to be so exhausted by not having money and having to tell her children that we're not buying snacks. About 2 days ago, I was grating potatoes with my grater to make Lay's because I didn't want to explain to my kids why there's no snacks. I was like, God, today, can I just not have to do that? She doesn't have to do that. And I do. I had to find God in order to be able to pray and to trust God. Because this country it's frustrating. And I don't think people quite understand how humiliating poverty is. It's humiliating. It's humiliating. You know, it's humiliating to have to go to your kid's school and to call a meeting and to go speak with the principal and explain why. It's humiliating for somebody who doesn't have qualifications. Imagine for somebody who does, watching in the news all the people that are in positions that they don't qualify for. You watch State Capture. I mean, during State Capture, there was a lady that was literally making 3 million rand a year to sit in her office and read a newspaper. You know, I digress a bit.
No, I wanted to ask here. I think it's really important because so many people listening will absolutely associate with everything you're saying and your experience. Mm. So you have found ways of overcoming that, fighting it, finding projects to combat it. What tips would you give to people out there listening to you now to do the same as you, to overcome those things?
I would not say I have overcome. I would say that God overcomes for me daily. I hand over my will and my life over to the care of God every single day. If I sit with South Africa and the corruption and what's going on, I know where it puts me. It puts me in a position where I don't want to be. I don't want to ever be where I was a year ago. And so I just give it to God. And I know that's a crazy answer, right? Because in my giving it to God, I also then get busy with what I can get busy with. After I came out of rehab, I decided I'm going to apply for 100 jobs in 100 days. And after I applied for 100 jobs in 100 days and went through the process of it, and I think this is a tip. When you do things, do them and then be vigilant about it, like observe it. So I applied for 100 jobs in 100 days and I didn't get any word for about 2 months. And then I got 2 callbacks, but they were both in America and I did the interviews and I didn't get the job. And then I got 1 call back and I went for interviews. I went to the final stages, but that only happened this year. So after that, I did the 100 jobs in 100 days. There was this 100 days where nothing was happening. And then a friend of mine sent me a job application. She was really excited about it, but my heart sank. And I was like, that's an interesting feeling. And so I went online and I was researching, why do I feel like this? And so what happens, and I think this is what people need to understand about young people and the despondency that we're dealing with. When you apply for a job, it's a positive activity that you're engaging in. You are doing something about your material condition. And so your brain gets excited and it creates an expectation that something will come of this. It's like if you plant a seed, something will grow and you'll eat the thing that grows. So when you apply for a job, it's like that you're planting the seed. But in South Africa, we apply for jobs, plant the seeds, but nothing grows. And so it changes the chemistry of your brain that now your brain now teaches itself, because I did it repetitively. I did 100 job applications in 100 days. So I was repeating this neural pathway. And so I was teaching my brain that when I plant a seed, nothing grows. That whatever I do comes to nothing. And I said, I don't want to teach my brain that. And so I stopped applying for jobs. I was like, no, no, no. We don't do this anymore. We do things that bear fruit. And I think that is the thing that's been amazing for me now, is that Soweto Night Out is a thing that I thought about, that I built for 5 years, and it actually became something. And every time I get a booking, I do a night tour, and everybody is always impressed, and everybody is always excited, and everybody always says, why doesn't this happen more? This is amazing. This is great. It's a thing that I want in my life. When I sing, I make music, and the music gets produced and then it gets released. Now, with the release of my new music, the music industry has changed a lot. So I released my music and I didn't get as many plays as I wanted it to get. And I felt that, oh, I was a little bit sad about that. But when I give you my song and you play it, you can make the activity to get on my playlist, to follow me, to, like, it can only get bigger. It's like when I plant a seed, it germinates. But the other stuff that has anything to do with the state.
So tell us more about your single.
You know, when I came out of rehab, I started writing music. The album is called Surrender, because I had to surrender to God. It's coming out in October at 2025. But I've got this new single called Next Week Tuesday, and that's out. And then I've got another single called Njalo Njalo coming out. So before I recorded this first song, Next Week Tuesday, one of my other things that I was trying to do to make money, because before I went into rehab, I was desperately just trying to make money. And it was just frantic and just painful. One of the things I was doing was an open mic session, and it was on a Tuesday. And I wanted people to come to this thing, and people were not coming. And in that moment, I just made up a hook. I said, can we go out and smile together next week, Tuesday? That first song is the first single now. But the most beautiful thing about it is, when I sang that, the producer, I'd never met him, and the guitarist, bassist, who made the music, I'd never met them. But at the same time that I was singing that, they were making the music. And that's how God is speaking to me. God is saying to me, even when you think I'm not with you, I'm with you. And that would be the tip I give a person, is that trust God, trust the process, and listen for the voice of God and be in communication.
Oh, Nomsa, just want to salute your immense courage and resilience and creativity in so many different areas. How can listeners support you? How can they put their weight behind what you're doing?
You can listen to my music on any online music streaming platform, iTunes, Spotify, Deezer, all of them. I'm on there. My musician name is Nomi Superstar. So that's Nomi Superstar. Please stream my music, share my music, spread my music. That is one showcase way to support me. I need millions of streams to make an income. And so really, please do share with friends, play it often, enjoy the music. Then of course, if you are a corporate, please support Soweto Night Out. If you're looking for innovative business ideas that enable women's safety, get in touch with me. Soweto Night Out is one business that enables women's safety, enables women to access a livelihood, to make an income. But there are more ideas where that came from that just need, you know, a little bit of backing.
Like your app.
Absolutely. So from the Funkit I'm Walking and the work that we do, we did the Soweto Night Out. And a lot of women came and said, you know, I love that you're doing night tours at night, but I would just love somebody to walk me home. And we've got the database of all the CPFs. And so we have developed an app, you know, the framework of how it works. And that app would basically be an Uber, but for people to walk. So people being walked home by Community Policing Forum. You know, one of the other programs we did was called Soweto Saturdays, where we were cleaning all the dumping sites in Soweto. And with some help from Weber Wenzel, we were able to get a legal opinion on one of the opportunities around making sure that there's no illegal dumping sites in the townships, because illegal dumping sites beget crime. They create this insecure environment. And so what we now need funding for is in the dumping sites, what's in there is nappies and pads. And so we went and we researched, and there's machines that recycle nappies and pads. And so we're looking for the funding to buy that machine. And basically what we're going to do is test it in Soweto, but it would be like a pink bank. So women would bring used nappies and used pads to us, and then we pay them for it. And then we recycle and we basically repurpose and clean and sterilize all that waste material. There's a piece of technology that I obviously wouldn't talk about, but it's highly lucrative. So the business model makes sense. We just don't have the 4 million upfront to buy the equipment to set ourselves up to run the pink bank. So that's something that I really do want to do, because our byproduct solves another problem.
So any backers listening? Here we go.
And the app is much less than 4 million, right?
The app is much less than 4 million. We've costed that. That's 400,000 just to get it up and going in the marketing. Such apps work on uptake. So we have to get people to uptake. The businesses that we develop, we research them. Of course, I love studying. I love researching. I love reading. I'm an economist. So a lot of the business idea development doesn't need any money, because I just do it. And that is a really good business that I would like to get up and running.
Any backers listening? Come on.
What a fantastic idea. Nomsa, anything you want to add that we haven't asked you about?
No, just wishing you all the best with your podcast, and that it is very successful and it's listened to from all the corners of the world. And to anybody who's listening, especially in South Africa, we are who we have been waiting for. Don't leave it to anybody else. You are the thing that you're waiting for. So get up and do something.
Thank you so much.
I'm certainly going out here to do something.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, and I really hope to bet somebody picks up and invests in her ideas.
Me too. I think that would be amazing. Anyway, to find out more about Nomsa, you can go to our website, www.thiswayoutpodcast.org. And please rate and review this episode. It'll help people to find Nomsa and all the other people we interview.
Thank you for listening to This Way Up.